This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Wastewater, that's the water that drains down our sinks and showers and flushes down our toilets, is traditionally treated by sewage treatment plants before it can be reused. But such plants are expensive. There is now growing awareness of a cheaper, more environmentally sustainable option to treat wastewater. And that is to mimic how nature has always done it, through wetlands. Wetlands are considered to be the kidneys of an ecosystem, filtering and processing waste. And it turns out constructed wetlands can work as well as natural ones, and when properly managed, can even be a tourist attraction. Writing about it for Yes Magazine is Bryn Nelson, former microbiologist and freelance science, health and environment writer. He's the author of Flush, The Remarkable Science of an Unlikely Treasure. As a staff writer on the science desk at Newsday from 2000 to 2007, he covered genetics, biomedicine, ecology, global warming, and a wide range of other topics. And he now joins me to discuss his story in Yes called The Surprising Power of Wastewater Wetlands. Welcome to the program, Bryn.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here.
So first, let's talk about what constructed wetlands are. How are they different from natural wetlands?
Sure. So the technique has evolved over time, but essentially the idea is that you are mimicking nature. And so what you want is a variety of rushes, reeds, native wetland plants, because those are so good at sort of filtering water, getting some of the phosphorus and nitrogen out of the water. That's the excess pollutants that can be caused. And so it started with an awareness that wetlands were really good at filtering water. And so now the idea is, well, let's work with nature instead of against it. And so it's sort of a pairing of the what we would call gray infrastructure with some of the systems that we have built with green infrastructure, which is working with nature. And so over time, engineers and researchers have learned that these two systems can work very well together.
What do you mean by gray infrastructure?
Sure. So gray infrastructure would be like the traditional sewer systems that we have, the traditional wastewater treatment plants. Green infrastructure would be something like green roofs, bioswales that would help as kind of natural retention ponds, and wetlands. Wetlands can be a form of green infrastructure, either preserving them, restoring them, or in some cases even constructing them where, you know, there was pasture land before. In some of these cases, there were no wetlands there previously, but we've learned how to basically construct these, and then nature kind of takes over and fills in the blanks.
And that's kind of a remarkable thing that happens. So how exactly does a constructed wetlands project work from just the broad-based outlines? I imagine that it requires careful construction, a lot of monitoring, and then time?
Yes. So for wetlands, you basically need space and time. And these are different from natural systems in that they're more like managed gardens in a way, because if your primary purpose is to filter the water, you need to make sure that you're maintaining against some invasive species, invasive plants and animals that can kind of disrupt the system. So for example, some invasive plants can take over from some of the native ones. And so then the filtering ability is lessened. Or you might have invasive animals that will come and eat the vegetation that you want. So there is this maintenance aspect of it. But yes, you start with either the remnants of a wetland, because in a lot of cases, they're starting with something that used to be there, or you're kind of transforming, basically a former pasture or something And so you have to be very careful about what are the plants that you're selecting. Do you want to vary the terrain? Because what they've also determined is that these can be really remarkable hotspots for birds. And so one of the ideas is for some of the wetlands, you vary the topography a bit because some birds like deeper water, some birds like shallower water. And so you can be very mindful of how you're doing this to attract or basically create different habitats for the diversity of animals. And so you're at the same time you're thinking about the filtration system, you're also thinking about what can this do for nature. And that's kind of the new evolution of this is thinking about both at the same time.
And they generally tend to work hand in hand, as you were saying earlier. How does it work for those who might be wondering? All right, we get a bunch of, sewage, basically the raw stuff that gets collected, the debris of civilization, if you will. It has to go somewhere, and it's energy intensive to have the chemical sewage treatment plants, etc. If instead of constructed wetlands were to filter it, how does that work? The sewage reaches the wetlands, and then what happens? What's the magic that happens, if you will?
Sure. So, and I should clarify that in this case, the wetlands are being used to polish the water. There is still initial treatment through the wastewater treatment system.
I
But what's
see.
kind of cool is that system has also, we've also learned from nature. So our wastewater systems now are a lot more natural in a way than they used to be. So less reliant on chemicals and more on biologicals. So what
And
that
when you say
means is,
our, do you mean the US as a whole?
I mean, in general throughout the world, I mean, this is, obviously there are varying degrees of wastewater systems, but I think in general, the industry as a whole has learned that it is, again, better to work with nature. And so what you see at the center of a lot of these wastewater treatment plants is basically microbes. Bacteria are very, very good at breaking down organic matter into progressively smaller bits of organic matter. So what you're doing is you're basically harnessing the ability of microbes as our basic the world's decomposers, if you will, to help treat the wastewater. So you have a series of filtration events, then you have sort of this decomposition of material through the microbes. Then what is released is actually fairly well treated. What you're using the wetlands for is to get rid of some of the remaining pollutants. So those would be things like phosphorus and nitrogen, because we know that if you have too much of those are the ones that cause these algal blooms that you see. It kind of looks like, guacamole on the surface of a water. So these can be very harmful. Wetlands can also add back oxygen to the water, which is very important for aquatic life. They can also help lower the temperature, because typically when the temperature of the water comes out of the wastewater treatment plant, it's warmer than it should be. And so what wetlands can do is kind of help bring that temperature back down to kind of the natural temperature that it should be. So what you're doing is you're kind of naturalizing the water, because a lot of this water then ends up going to rivers, to bays, to oceans. So you want it to be as healthy as possible to help some of these downstream ecosystems.
And I imagine it's a climate-friendly process as well, then.
Yes, absolutely. And in a number of ways, I think one of the most important realizations is that our wetlands are really endangered, really imperiled. And this isn't a complete replacement. And so I don't want to argue that we should be doing this instead of taking care of the wetlands that we already have. Those are vitally important. But this is a way of at least in part bringing back some of these systems. And what's been really cool to see is that a lot of these have become bird watching hotspots, because the birds can find food, they can find nesting material, they can find refuge. And so a lot of these have become basically de facto wildlife refuges. And so that has attracted a number of people as well.
So
So
this is
there's that.
where there's the tourist attraction part of it,
Yes,
and
absolutely.
yeah.
So people have come, people have gotten married in some of these places.
Wow.
And a lot of these utilities are very mindful of that. And so they have, put in walking trails, benches, and made this basically an amenity for people. So that's one aspect of it, but also just the way that we're able to then reuse the water. Because what we're doing is we're treating it to such an extent that in some of these places, like Sweetwater Wetlands in Tucson, for example, that water is clean enough that it can then be used for irrigation and other purposes. So in other cases, you're basically cleaning the water and then you're putting it back into an aquifer, for example, that it then can be reused. So that's a way of basically conserving this very precious resource that we have.
One of the things that you point out in your story for Yes is that there becomes this kind of sense of community ownership over these constructed wetlands that become these, tourist attractions because they are bringing wildlife back. Bird watchers get excited about it. People get attached to, wildlife who they get to know through social media, which can be tough for those managing it because then their decision making might get questioned by the public. But on the other hand, it can be a positive thing, right? To have that sense of community ownership.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think this has maybe surprised some of the wastewater engineers and managers is that these have become beloved places because you are bringing nature back to a place that maybe the landscape was degraded previously. And so yeah, when you bring back a nice wetlands, when you have a lot of wildlife that's there, and that tends to invite people to come and to bird watch, to walk. And I think the friction there is just reminding people that the primary purpose is also to clean the water. So it is a functional space as well as a public amenity. And sometimes those are hard to balance because sometimes you have to maintain the space. So you may have to close it temporarily for certain times to take out some of the invasive species, for example, or to take away some of the dead vegetation that may be sort of degrading its ability to filter the water. And so I think in that case, what some of these utilities have learned is just to be very communicative with the public and say, we're glad that you're here. Let's also just kind of remind you what these spaces are for. But yes,
Those are good
they've become
problems to have, I
big
think,
problems to
right?
have. Yes, absolutely.
Right, and you point out that some of the wetlands projects are encouraging the public to participate with photography contests and other things that enable them to appreciate what these projects can do. And this is this sort of symbiosis can be really powerful, right? Where we're performing a necessary service that also brings people joy, is eco-friendly, is financially sustainable. So there's a lot of win-win-wins here.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's a way of getting the public educated about the benefits of water management, the benefits of bringing some of these spaces back to the communities. Yeah, there's a lot of wins here. And I think, the key is just being open and transparent with them and saying, look, this is what these wetlands are for. This is their primary purpose. But they're also becoming these wonderful community spaces. And so I think, yeah, absolutely, getting people educated about the role of these in conservation, in conserving water, conserving wildlife, I think is a great message.
Let me ask you a question that I don't think you covered in your story for Yes, but that sort of piqued my curiosity. Creating these wetlands, preserving them, monitoring them, ensuring that invasive species get taken out, etc., I imagine requires some skilled workers. Is there a shortage of such workers? Is this a field of study for people considering college right now, for example?
Absolutely. I mean, wetland ecologists, you need people who are skilled at wildlife biology, hydrologists, you know, studying how water moves in a space, engineers. It's really a kind of become a multidisciplinary field, because these are complicated systems. You know, this is a living system that we are calling upon to help us clean our water. And so you have to consider the invasive species. You have to consider how the water moves. Is this going to be an inviting place for birds? And what happens if invasive species move in, and how do you manage that? So there's a lot of skills and expertise that's required here. So absolutely, I would say that this is going to be fields of study that are going to be really in demand.
I want to thank you so much, Bryn, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your story from our website and risingupwithsonali.com. And of course, people can check it out directly at yesmagazine.org. Thanks so much. And we hope you'll write for us again in the future.
Thanks so much, Sonali. It was a pleasure.
My guest has been Bryn Nelson, former microbiologist, freelance science, health, and environmental writer, and the author of Flush, The Remarkable Science of an Unlikely Treasure. And we've been discussing a story that he just wrote for Yes Magazine about constructed wetlands. And you can find it at yesmagazine.org. It's called The Surprising Power of Wastewater Wetlands. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.